that he had held one joint account with the Argentinian dictator, Juan Perón, and on August 4th, 5th, and 14th, 1967, he had written checks on demand accounts in First National City Bank, now Citibank, Overseas Division of New York, the Chase Manhattan Bank, and Manufacturers Hanover Trust Company, all cleared through Deutsche Bank of Buenos Aires. Then there was a police report from Córdoba Province, dated April 22, 1955, in which a police agent with special knowledge of Bormann spotted the Nazi in the company of two other men in a hotel and trailed them. He overheard one of the men acknowledge the short, balding man, who obviously was the superior of the three, by saying, "Jawohl, Herr Bormann." By 1972, it was apparent to anyone who desired to know that Martin Bormann had been operating in South America for some time. Researcher and author Ladislas Farrago caused a minor sensation in that year with his articles published in England's Daily Express detailing Bormann's activities. In 1974, Farrago used his findings on Bormann in his book Aftermath, Martin Bormann and the Fourth Reich. His investigative work led to a New York Times story published on November 27, 1972, and datelined Buenos Aires. It stated, "Argentine Secret Service sources said today that Martin Bormann was sheltered in the country after World War II, but could not confirm reports that he still lived there." Sources in Salta confirmed that the ranch where Bormann was said to have lived was owned by German industrialists. The intelligence sources said other Nazis arrived in Argentina with Bormann and were sheltered there, particularly by Vittorio Mussolini, son of the Italian dictator. Of course, only Bormann, Mengele, Eichmann, and a few other leading Nazis garnered occasional news headlines. Thousands managed to slip through the hands of authorities unnoticed, thanks to business connections or passports provided by the Vatican. It seems apparent that it was not only business interests protecting the Nazis, but individuals within the American government. For example, someone with access to U.S. archives later took steps to obliterate any record of Kammler or his fate. Nick Cook tried to trace Kammler and hit a brick wall. Protracted searches by archivists at the U.S. National Archives for any data on Kammler had failed to locate a single entry for him, wrote Cook. Given Kammler's range of responsibilities in the final months of the war, this absence of evidence was remarkable. So much so that one archivist at Modern Military Records, College Park, Maryland, said, "Somebody had been in and cleaned up the records."
This is the end of the CD. The audiobook continues on the next CD.